I am Tom Hudson in Miami. My co-host Melissa Ross in Jacksonville will join us shortly. We're going to be talking about prescription drugs and healthcare in the Sunshine State today, Melissa. Lots to talk about, lots of money on the line, and of course, the health of millions of Floridians being in the middle of this debate when it comes to healthcare, health insurance, as well as the cost of prescription drugs. More than $30 billion has been spent on prescription drugs in Florida last year alone. This is according to data from the Kaiser Family Foundation. Floridians used all kinds of ways to pay for that medicine: insurance, Medicare, Medicaid, cash and credit cards to pay for the drugs that they need. We bought the drugs at pharmacies, retail counters, and through mail order.
Someone go get Alan.
In the first weeks as governor, Ron DeSantis floated the idea of importing drugs from Canada as a way to tackle higher prices.
Save money for individuals, could reduce costs for our businesses, and it can relieve pressure on our state budget.
Why didn't they just?
Floridians need relief from the rising costs of prescription drugs.
Florida lawmakers have been working on this idea in the last several weeks in Tallahassee during this legislative session. There's a bill moving in the Florida House that would allow the state to buy and import medicine from Canada, for instance. Republican Senator Aaron Bean is working on a similar push in the Florida State Senate.
Let's take, for instance, Tecfidera. Tecfidera is a drug used by multiple sclerosis patients. And in Canada, that pill costs $11.90 every day. In the United States, that pill costs $119 per pill. That's 1,000% markup.
So would bringing that medicine from Canada mean cheaper prices for medicine for Floridians? The state could decide to import all the medicine it wants. But it's not up to the state. It's up to the federal government to allow any program that lawmakers here in Florida may okay. And Florida is not alone in looking for cheaper medicine sources. At least a dozen states across the country are considering similar efforts. Vermont already has approved the importation of prescription drugs from Canada. Vermont legislators did that last year. President Trump, meantime, has talked about going after the rising price of prescription drugs, and Florida Senator Rick Scott is emerging as the administration's point man on health care. Here's the former governor speaking with NPR's Morning Edition on Monday this week.
Drug prices are too high. So I put a bill out last week that would require transparency so you know what things cost. But on top of that, Americans, it's not fair that we pay more for drugs than Europeans pay.
So we're going to spend the whole hour here this week on the Florida Roundup talking about health care and the price of prescription drugs. Should Florida import cheaper medicines from Canada? How would that work? What would be the effect on your pocketbook or the effect in your medicine cabinet? How much are you paying for your prescription medicine? 305-995-1800 is our phone number across the state of Florida, 305-995-1800. Of course, you can send us a tweet as well, at Florida Roundup on Twitter. My co-host Melissa Ross will be along with us from WJCT in just a few moments. Julio Ochoa is along with us now. He is the editor of Health News Florida at the sister station that we have in Tampa, WUSF. Julio, let's talk about this idea of importation of drugs from Canada into Florida. As I mentioned, it's really the federal government that holds the ability to approve this. So what are state lawmakers really trying to do? Is it just a symbolic message, ultimately, that they could do in Tallahassee? Sounds like Julio is not hearing us either. We will get connected with Julio Ochoa in Tampa in just a matter of moments. When you take a look at the prescription drug costs and how Floridians pay for those prescription drugs, it is a mix of methods. Of course, there are those Floridians that have private insurance. They perhaps get that insurance through an employer, and they have a prescription drug benefit that they may use in order to get their monthly allotment of medicine. And there's a copay involved, for instance, and you will see that kind of discount printed out on your receipt or included in your mail order if you get your prescription drugs that way. There's also, of course, the government health plans that are operating with the millions of Floridians, Medicare and Medicaid in Florida. Medicare, more than 10 years ago, for instance, included a prescription drug benefit with Medicare, but the federal government does not negotiate with those prescription drug providers. Julio Ochoa, the editor of Health News Florida, is with us now in WUSF in Tampa. Julio, what's at stake here? Is this merely a symbolic effort on the part of Florida lawmakers, given that the federal government is really the entity that has the ability to approve or not approve of Canadian drugs coming into the United States?
Well, I think, Tom, that they're very hopeful that the federal government will approve this. This is something that's been done for years, really, by people just going to Canadian drugstores in residents here in Florida have been doing it, kind of illegally, but the government hasn't cracked down on it for individuals. So I think they're trying to pressure the government to allow this to happen legitimately.
And the pressure is being applied, obviously, by the Republican legislature and the Republican governor. Let's talk a little bit about the politics before the specifics of this. Is this kind of leveraging that relationship that Governor Ron DeSantis has with the guy that occupies the Oval Office?
Yeah, they seem to be pretty tight. So he says he talked to the president about it, and the president was, quote, enthusiastic about it. But then the White House put out kind of a terse response saying that they looked forward to educating Governor Ron DeSantis about all of the things that they're doing to help health care.
Sounds like a very polite cool your jets on this one, right? Muster in Tallahassee, and the federal government does okay some kind of transaction here between Floridians and Canadian drugs. We're not talking about Canadian-made drugs. It's just medicines that's in Canada that would be imported here, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, many of the drugs are made here in America and sent to Canada, and then they'd be imported back into the United States. It depends on which version of or which bill you're looking at. There's a version in the House and a version in the Senate. Both of them would do two different things. Both bills would allow the state to import drugs, and that would mean they would make those available to prisoners and to people who use Medicaid. The House version would go a step further and allow individuals to get Canadian drugs. And in some cases, it would be Canadian pharmacies would export them to American pharmacies, and then the individuals would get them from those pharmacies.
It's an important distinction that you make between the two houses there. The House version and the Senate version there, one idea would be to just allow the state as the buyer for prescription drugs to import these medicines from Canada, and the Floridians that rely on the state for their insurance would have access potentially to those medicines if they're obviously at a cheaper price, where the other one would also involve the private insurance market, the much larger insurance market. 40% of Floridians that get their health insurance and prescription drug benefits, presumably through health insurance through the workplace, right?
Yeah, and that one would clearly have the biggest impact on the most people and help them get cheaper prescriptions from Canada. Like I said earlier, many of them are already doing that. You can go to mom and pop stores, storefronts around Florida anyway, and go into them, and they will help you buy prescription drugs from Canada. Now, the Trump administration did start cracking down on those just last year. So it's interesting now that you have this conversation, both out of the state and out of the federal government, that was trying to allow this process to take place.
And so what is at stake? I mean, what are some of the economics here? What are some of the health considerations that the lawmakers are looking at and, frankly, Floridians ought to be aware of?
Well, people that have raised concern about this are talking about counterfeit drugs, you know, that you don't know what you're going to get from a foreign country. And they're not just talking about Canada here. They're also talking about importing drugs from overseas or Europe. So that's the biggest thing you hear from people who have concerns, that you're going to get counterfeit drugs, and that could have huge health implications.
But as you mentioned, right, many of these drugs are made in the United States. They are imported into Canada, which has a national health plan. And then these efforts are about re-importing are often American-made medicines.
Right. And I mean, I guess if you deal with reputable pharmacies in Canada, it would seem that and they want to do business with American consumers, that they would make sure that they're giving them a safe product. But that's the question.
Julio Ochoa is along with us, the editor of Health News Florida from our sister station in Tampa, WUSF. We're taking your phone calls soon here, 305-995-1800. Money and the Medicine Cabinet, the possibility of allowing Canadian, U.S.-made drugs to be re-imported from Canada into Florida. Florida lawmakers are talking about that. Floridians spend billions of dollars each year on medicine. My co-host, Melissa Ross from WJCT in Jacksonville. Melissa, I think we got you hooked up now.
Hey, guys.
There we go. Wonderful. Great. A little technical difficulties there, but we've got that straightened out.
Yes. And so many calls and tweets coming into the show. It is amazing. This is a topic that touches so many Floridians, Julio. Almost anyone you talk to knows a story about a friend, a coworker, a relative, a loved one who is struggling to pay for medication. And as we talk about this, I want to read a couple of tweets that have come into the show. Tweet us now, wherever you are in the state, at Florida Roundup, as we sort of take the pulse of Florida about this idea of trying to import cheaper prescription drugs than Canada. And Julio, in particular, we're getting tweets pointing out what some seem to see is a hypocritical move on the part of Florida lawmakers. Here's one from Suzanne. Canada has cheaper meds because they have a single-payer system. Why should we be able to piggyback off that system instead of implementing a single-payer system here? Here's another tweet from another listener. Well, you want Canadian or European drug prices? Then get a single-payer system with insurance as a supplement, as in Germany. Healthcare is a continuum. What happened to the market? The market is working. You just don't like the results. Meaning allegedly the you being state lawmakers. Okay, Julio Ochoa, what about that criticism that in Florida our political leadership wants to have it both ways? They want a free market healthcare system, but when that market leads to skyrocketing prices, that doesn't fly either. And so is it hypocritical for lawmakers to seek the importation of drugs from Canada, which are cheaper, at least in some respects, because Canada has a completely different approach to how it pays and distributes health care? What about that seeming tension there?
Right. That is an interesting dilemma there. Canada does place caps on the cost of drugs. So that does keep the prices cheaper, and that could deal with their single-payer system. And if you want access to the Canadian market, then you can't overcharge for drug prices. Our federal government could do that same thing. They could say that you cannot overcharge or increase the cost of drugs beyond a reasonable amount. But they have failed to do that, and they are not trying to do that or attempting to do that. I haven't seen any proposals to do that. Instead, they're talking about these transparency things, and states are having to go the end around to go through Canada. Fairly enough, some states would prefer a single-payer system, not Florida, though.
Yeah, certainly we don't have the political will for that here in Florida, but the burden of paying for medication is real wherever you stand politically. Here's a tweet from Chris. My partner is chronically ill. We pay between $300 to $400 a month in prescription copays. We've checked the cash prices. Without insurance, those meds would cost more than $10,000. We live paycheck to paycheck, fearing a job loss that would make her medicines cost prohibitive. Julio, that's a fear that grips so many Americans. Their fear that without health insurance, if they lose it for any reason and they can't afford to access insurance, say, on the healthcare.gov exchange, that they just won't be able to afford medicine, that they'll have to choose, for example, between buying food or buying medicine or paying the mortgage or paying for medicine. These are difficult questions, I think, that state governments, not just Florida, but others too, are grappling with, because this is a real pain point for many millions of Americans. And in Florida, with our large senior population in particular, right?
Yeah, I mean, we hear it all the time from people who can't afford their medications. I mean, the diabetic drugs right now, the insulin for those, it's going through the roof. And there are many people who just depend on that every day to stay alive. And the fact that the cost can increase so much in such a short period of time, it just feels like the prescription drug companies are putting the squeeze on patients. And you're hearing that from patients every day. So many do. I mean, some I've heard go down to Mexico to get their insulin supplies and come back up. And it to them, I'm sure it seems very unfair that they would have to go to another country in order to get cheaper drugs when many of them, like we've said, are made here in the United States.
Kind of ironic, some people going south of the border to get medication. Now our legislature, Tom, is saying, let's go north of the border to get cheaper medication.
Yeah, looking anywhere to find cheaper medicine. Allison Kojak is the healthcare correspondent for NPR. She's with us now from the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Allison, there's a national debate, of course, happening here as well, driven to some degree by Florida Senator Rick Scott introducing some legislation about price transparency, not reimportation of medicine, but price transparency. What does he want to do?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Senator Scott has introduced a bill. It's pretty short and simple. And the first thing in it is price transparency, ensuring that people actually know what their medications are going to cost before they sign up for insurance. So before they enroll in a health plan, that health plan has to disclose what the prices are going to be and which drugs are going to be on the formulary of their insurance. But in addition, he is proposing price caps, which is pretty unusual for a free market Republican.
Yeah, yes, it is. Former hospital CEO. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure there are a lot of people in the industry who are surprised by this. I just talked to one of Senator Scott's staff members, and he said what they are proposing is guaranteeing that companies in the U.S. who buy prescription drugs can't be charged more than the lowest price that's being offered in France, Germany, the U.K., or Japan.
He talked about when Morning Edition spoke with the senator this week, he spoke about these European prices. Are they just incredibly cheaper in Europe? Are they subsidized at all? And, you know, here in Florida, we're having this debate about Canadian importation drugs.
Yeah, no, they are not subsidized as such. What they have in those countries are national healthcare systems. And so those countries' governments, in the form of their healthcare systems, negotiate for the whole country drug prices. So they can walk away if they don't like what the drug company wants to charge. We have this competitive system in the U.S., which often can produce better results. But when you have one big player and they say, all right, this is what we're going to pay, you often get a lower price.
But, you know, Melissa, we do have one big player, right? I mean, Medicare is an enormous healthcare payer. But, when the prescription drug benefit was added, it was decided that Medicare, the federal government, was not going to negotiate prices with the pharmaceutical manufacturers.
That's right. Allison, as this debate intensifies, and as you follow health policy in Washington, by the way, we're getting lots of tweets about Rick Scott being tapped to lead healthcare policy for the Trump administration. We'll get into that in just a moment. But let me ask you, though, following on what Tom said, hold this till after the break. Will we see a change in a further movement, I guess, toward negotiating prices the way you described just a moment ago? It's the Florida Roundup with your calls and tweets as we talk about healthcare and prescription drug prices. Give us a call right now. Do you think your meds just cost too darn much? We want to hear from you. It's 305-995-1800. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup as we talk about healthcare and prescription drug prices on the show this Friday with your calls and tweets here on the Roundup at 305-995-1800. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup as we continue with Allison Kojak, health policy correspondent at NPR, and Julio Ochoa of Health News Florida. Okay. Allison, let me ask you about this, the political divide on this. You know, certainly our legislature in Florida doesn't want to expand the Affordable Care Act. They are part of a federal lawsuit seeking to chip away at the Affordable Care Act. At the same time, they are facing this pressure from their constituents about prescription drug prices. And as you noted, other countries have been able to bend the cost curve down on that somewhat by the way they negotiate prices. Here is a tweet from Andy Slavitt, the former head of Medicare, Medicaid, and the Affordable Care Act for former President Obama. He's not tweeting the show, but a listener just alerted me to this. He tweeted out, today I recommended to the National Academy of Science panel on chronic illness that we nationalize insulin and make it a public good. Yes, I went full socialist. I feel the same way about clean air, by the way, he says. Okay, and so, you know, when you bring the word socialism into the any discussion about medicine, it takes us right back to where the country was when we went through the whole policy debate over passage of the ACA. Mm-hmm. Other countries that have a more socialistic approach or, a more nationalized approach to medicine, they are able to spread the cost around in a different way to bring down the price of prescription drugs, although there are other issues about their systems that many Americans aren't fans of. As the Trump administration hints that they want to try once again to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act after 2020, and they're dealing with this, where do you see the policy discussion on this moving in D.C. over the next year? And protecting pre-existing conditions still a huge priority for so many Americans as well. Where do you see the politics of this going? Not just for Florida, but for the country.
You know, the politics are hard. I mean, I would say, first of all, prescription drugs prices is a separate issue than the Affordable Care Act for many reasons. But when you talk about the Affordable Care Act, what is happening is it got this label of being government takeover of healthcare, socialist, when really this reform of the healthcare system was one that was supposed to preserve the competitive system by keeping the private insurance companies there. And anyone who has insurance through any ACA exchange knows they buy it from a private company. So what happened now is that in this lawsuit that several Republican governors have filed to try to overturn the Affordable Care Act, what you find is that there are a lot of people who want to both overturn the Affordable Care Act but keep some of its most popular provisions, which are sort of the core of the law, which is basically ensuring that anybody who needs health insurance can buy it even if they have been sick in the past. And that was one of the big problems before the Affordable Care Act. That drives up costs for people who are healthy and drives down costs for people who are sick, or at least allows them access. And so what you end up with is winners and losers, and that's why this law is so complicated. Republicans tried over and over and over again with a whole bunch of different bills. There were at least five to repeal the Affordable Care Act and replace it with something that was palatable, and they all failed. So it's hard to imagine what Senator Scott is going to come up with in 2020 and his colleagues that will be different but still maintain these core principles, which is people who have been ill in the past will still be allowed to get insurance at the same price as people who have not.
Allison, it's Tom Hudson. Let me ask you just quickly about Rick Scott's kind of position with the Trump administration as one of these point persons in the Senate. We're getting some tweets, as Melissa referred to. He has certainly a lot of legacy baggage, to put it politely, around healthcare. He was the former CEO. He was the CEO of Columbia HCA, a hospital chain that wound up paying more than $1.5 billion in federal fines for healthcare fraud and Medicare fraud. Is that going to haunt him and or the administration, or frankly, are eyes wide open with that kind of baggage that Senator Scott brings into this healthcare debate?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. First of all, when the president named Senator Scott as one of the people he was going to have do this, Senator Scott seemed quite surprised by that. So I'm not sure that he went into this sort of saying, raising his hand. He was sort of pointed to, it appeared. And I do think that that baggage will become an issue, depending on what he comes up with, but in part because this is so political. Democrats don't want to have anything to do with repealing the Affordable Care Act or overturning it in the courts. And so the minute you put somebody who was in the private healthcare industry and defrauded it, whether it was Senator Scott himself or the company he was leading, mm-hmm. that's just going to be a really hard sell for, you know, in political Washington. That is, they're not going to let that go, whether or not it's relevant.
It's interesting to get the reaction from Floridians about this, because, of course, here in Florida, voters are very familiar with Senator Scott's history. This is the first time, though, it's sort of being displayed to a national audience, Allison. Does that give the Democratic Party a weapon when they argue health care going into 2020?
Yeah, they can point to him as sort of a corrupt healthcare executive. And, you know, whether that's fair or not, I'm not going to say, but that's how politics work in D.C. This is going to be, if he comes up with a bill that is at all viable at some point, you know, and that's all up in the air at this point, but, you know, that's a political liability for any bill when you have, I mean, there have been bills promoted by people who have stellar healthcare credentials and they still get attacked. So Senator Scott, it will be hard for him to avoid that discussion.
Well, and for the time being, the senator's own focus on healthcare has been on prescription drug prices. Lots of phone calls here talking about prescription drug prices, sharing your experiences with us on the Florida Roundup, 305-995-1800 in Pinellas County. Sheila on line 8. Go ahead, Sheila. What's your story? Thanks for joining us. Sheila, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Yes, I have two stories. One is I travel a great deal all over the world, and I buy the majority of my drugs out of the country. You can buy them over the counter. They are the original drugs made by the original manufacturer, either in Germany or in the U.S., and so, they are a great deal less expensive.
So, Sheila, how can you be certain that it is the same drug? Because the critics of this reimportation policy worry about contamination, worry about fake medicine.
It's the same drug. It has the original manufacturer's label on it. It tells you, for instance, there is a drug called, I forgot what the drug is, but it's made in Germany. The drug is sold all over the world, and I usually buy it in Europe because here it's $65. In England, it's $18. And the cheapest price is in Canada, it's $11. And it has the original manufacturer's label on it.
Sheila, we got a lot of calls. I appreciate you sharing that story. Julio Ochoa with WUSF. Just one experience of a Floridian, you know, saving money on the medicine and getting some international travel miles, it sounds like, in the meantime. You know, how much economics are at stake here? Do we have any sense of what the savings could be if Florida has a narrow drug reimportation plan for just those that are on state insurance, or has a more broader one that includes private insurance?
Well, Tom, I think you get a sense of how important this is when you see how many drug lobbyists are showing up to the subcommittee meetings in Tallahassee to talk about this and to stand up against it. They really don't want people to be able to purchase medications from Canada, and they're lining up to voice their concern with this plan and raise the red flags about the counterfeit drugs and the safety issues. But really, I think there's a lot of money on the line for them.
Sure. It's 305-995-1800. We are taking your calls from across the state this Friday here on the Florida Roundup. As we talk about this push in Tallahassee to set up a program that would theoretically import cheaper prescription drugs from Canada, what are your thoughts about that? Let's go to Dan in Merritt Island. Dan, you're a doctor, is that right? Good afternoon. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, I've been in practice here in Florida for over 30 years, and I think this plan is completely unworkable and really I'd call it preposterous.
Why is that?
The pharmaceutical industry knows very well that right now they lose very few sales imports from Canada, but if this really started eating into their market, they simply wouldn't sell to Canadian pharmacies that export drugs to the U.S. I mean, they have that right. That would happen instantly, and they've already said that. So this plan is unrealistic, and it doesn't even make sense. The reason drug prices are high in the U.S. is because almost all drugs are monopolies. Drugs that have been in use for 40 years, like colchicine, which is a treatment for gout, the FDA made a sweetheart deal with a pharmaceutical company that gave it exclusive marketing rights, and the price went through the roof. Drug companies will charge as much as they can, and as monopolies, that price will be much higher than most people can afford.
So you don't think really, when other states have tried to do this with some success, you don't think that could be replicated here in Florida?
As long as the total amount of drugs that are imported is small, I really think this is a political maneuver. It probably will be difficult enough that not very many people will actually be able to do it. It does take time. You have to order things by mail. You have to establish accounts with Canadian pharmacies. But what I'm saying is it won't in any way impact the overall cost, because if it does get to that point, the pharmaceutical industry is just going to clamp down on it.
You think they'd react? Problem. Okay. All right. Thank you. That's Dr. Dan, a physician calling in from Merritt Island. And you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Okay. Allison Kojak, what about Dr. Dan's perspective on this? What are your thoughts?
He makes a great point, actually. There are two great points. One is reimportation is a little bit absurd. If a company buys the drug that was produced in the United States, a wholesaler buys it in Canada, and then somebody in the U.S. buys it back, that's, just silly. And if it happens at a small scale, the pharmaceutical companies are okay with that. They just kind of turn the other way. But if entire states start doing that, they have said, one, they'll just raise prices in Canada. The Canadian market is much smaller than the U.S. market. But the doctor's second point, which I think went by quickly but is important, is that we keep talking about our free market system in the United States, but our system is far from being a free market system. The U.S. government and many other governments, through its patent and its drug approval system, grants market exclusivity for very long periods of time to prescription drug. So drug companies will get a patent. It'll last 10 years. Then they'll patent the same drug again, a different part of it, and that patent will last another 10 years. Sometimes these drugs are medications that have been on the market. Insulin has been on the market for over 100 years, and most of the insulins that are available now are patented, and they are incredibly expensive, far more expensive than they were 20 years
ago.
That is because our government gives the companies a monopoly.
Let me just point out before you go to another call, Tom, lots of tweets coming into the show asking us to mention that, in their view, PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers, are driving up the price as these medications make their way through the process. That is a factor, at least from the point of view of people like the independent pharmacy groups and others that are tweeting the Florida Roundup right now. Just wanted to add that to the discussion. But
yeah,
Tom,
it's an interesting point because, right, what Dr. Dan mentioned and Allison, what you spoke about in terms of the patent protection, the idea behind that is the federal government, the FDA, allows these patents to go on for years and years for these drug companies to invest the millions and hundreds of millions of dollars in drug research to recoup those expenses. And then the disintermediation that happens in the market through the PBMs, the pharmacy benefit manager, is the person, the patient is so far removed from the actual price of the drug as more middlemen get in between a patient and the medicine that they need
the
healthcare that they need. There's a profit motive there, regardless of if it's an insurance company or a doctor's group or a pharmacy benefit manager. There's the profit motive, and they're going to need to get their slice of whatever revenue is going to be.
The medication gets more and more gets tacked on to any individual medication, Julio, as it makes its way to the consumer. We're just getting an incredible amount of feedback on social media about this. This is such an intensely felt personal issue for so many Floridians, Julio. There's no way we could get all of these anecdotes on the air that we're getting, people sharing their stories about what they are dealing with, their household budgets, trying to just get the medication they need to live, literally to live, Julio.
Right. And in terms of pharmacy benefit managers, there's just so much money to be made in this system that we have right now. So it's so difficult to unwind it. And you're seeing like the pharmacy benefit managers are presumably there to help find better prices and negotiate with pharmaceutical companies and drug makers. But they're getting a piece of the profit
as
well.
I mean, you know, it being a capitalist market, the pharmacy benefits manager can negotiate a better price with the drug manufacturer and, frankly, can profit off that better price. They don't necessarily have to pass it along to the patient. They can just negotiate in bulk. But one of the biggest pharmacy buyers out there, or pharmacy benefit payers out there, Medicare, doesn't negotiate with the pharmacy manufacturers. And Patty in Fort Pierce has some experience with this as a Medicare patient. Patty, thanks for holding on. You're on the radio. Go ahead.
Thank you. I am retired and disabled. I am on Medicare, and I have a Medicare Part D drug plan.
Mm-hmm.
And the three drugs that I have to use for my asthma and COPD are in what's called the top tier of that drug plan.
Patty, I'll tell you, time is running short here. If you can get to the point, I want to make sure it gets heard.
Okay, so an example is my Spiriva, which if I have to get it here, costs me over $350 a month. But I can get it from Canada for $68 for 3 months' worth.
Wow.
Big difference.
Yeah, big difference. Patty, thanks for holding on and sharing that experience. 305-995-1800. You know, the money impact in that medicine cabinet is enormous, obviously, for some families. At Florida Roundup is our Twitter handle, talking about drugs, medicine, and healthcare overall, as the debate in Florida is over prescription drugs re-imported from Canada. And Senator Rick Scott, tapped by the Trump administration to be one of the point people on replacing the Affordable Care Act if the Republicans have a replacement plan. You can join that conversation again statewide here on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks so much for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville, and we're continuing to take your calls statewide this Friday on the Roundup as we talk about the high price of prescription drugs and a move by the state legislature to try to get federal approval to import cheaper prescription meds from Canada. What do you think about that? Tell us your healthcare stories. 305-995-1800. Susan is in Cooper City, Florida. Hi, Susan. You're on the Florida Roundup. Go ahead.
Hi. One thing I have never heard addressed is the total amount of money that goes into these companies. I have a friend who works as vice president of a very small drug company. Total employees, fewer than 200. He makes $900,000 a year, excluding all of these stock options. I can't imagine what it's like at Merck and Pfizer. Has there ever been anything to address the exorbitant salaries? That's one of the reasons that it's so high. Why not pay them $300,000, $400,000? That's plenty.
Yeah, thank you, Susan. Julio Ochoa getting calls about that. How much of our healthcare system cost is embedded in what Susan just pointed out. We're getting more tweets about what people call PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers, that should be looked at. So as the state tries to find a way to ease the pain for consumers, is it too easy a fix to say, you know, we're just going to try to import cheaper drugs from Canada? As so many of our listeners are pointing out, our listeners are pretty savvy. They understand where the costs are in the system. Just based on the very unscientific feedback we're getting from Florida today, I think people see waste and abuse all throughout the healthcare system. And, I think they are saying more needs to be done than just this one measure.
Yeah, I think politicians are struggling with that same question. And, you know, one thing that allowing people to buy their prescriptions from Canada might do is disrupt the system that has so much money in it that we've been talking about. The pharmacy benefit managers, those who work for drug companies as well, trying to get people to purchase drugs. It's just this huge system and it contains so much money. So, you know, maybe possibly if people buy their prescriptions from Canada, that might cause some disruption in this system that is benefiting so many people.
305-995-1800. Wally in Jupiter on line 6. Go ahead, Wally. Your thoughts. You're on the radio.
Yeah, you've been talking around this issue of benefits, and the doctor brought it up earlier. Why doesn't the government not allow Medicare to negotiate for a better price? It has nothing to do with socialism. It's the American way. Negotiate for a better price.
So this dates back to the Medicare Part D plan that was approved during George W. Bush's administration. Allison Kojak with NPR, the healthcare correspondent. Was this some kind of grand bargain, essentially, with the pharmaceutical companies in order to get into the Medicare market, resist the effort of federal government to negotiate prices?
It was a combination. It was precisely that, to try to keep people on board. But in addition, you know, this was led by President George W. Bush, and it was a Republican plan. And so, you know, this is a group of people who firmly believe in what they, what they consider free market principles. So they wanted, instead of the government negotiating prices, just to be clear, Medicare prescription drug plans individually negotiate, but then they have far fewer people to negotiate on behalf of. If you put all 70 million people on Medicare into one bin and negotiated, you'd have far more power against the drug companies. And that's what they didn't want to do. They left it to the private insurers who put on these prescription drug plans to negotiate individually.
It's 305-995-1800 to join the Florida Roundup. Here's a tweet from Gulfport Pharmacy. If the PBMs were doing their fiduciary duty of negotiating better prices for prescription meds, we would see prices and premiums going down, not up, year over year. Just an enormous amount of frustration being expressed to us over Twitter this hour about PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers, prescription benefit managers. Let's go to Harge in Tampa. He has some thoughts about PBMs. Go ahead, Harge. You're on the air.
Harge, you're with us?
Are you with us? Go ahead. Are you there? Okay. Well, what he wanted to say, Julio, was that he believes PBMs are part of the problem. You know, when we put this show together and we researched everything related to this, this didn't come up a lot in our research of what's been published about this, but certainly we are getting an enormous amount of feedback from our listeners about pharmacy benefit managers. Yes, go ahead. What are your thoughts as well?
This is Allison. Well, so the situation is that PBMs work with the pharmaceutical companies, and they get rebates after the fact as opposed to discounts up front. And what the drug companies will say is that system gives them an incentive to start with a really high price. Mm-hmm. The PBMs will say, we're negotiating discounts off of whatever price the drug companies set. So they both are pointing fingers at each other for the blame for the high drug prices. But I will note that if you look at the profit margins, pharmaceutical companies have a much higher profit margin than the PBM companies. So if you kind of want to judge it by that, the PBMs get a lot of blame. And certainly the system they've created has created this incentive to higher prices. But the drug companies are making a lot more money.
Gotcha. Thanks for clarifying that. It's the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. As we continue taking your calls about prescription drug prices and a move to import them from Canada, we're getting calls from patients, doctors, and pharmacists. Let's go to Santo in Melbourne. You're a pharmacist, Santo, right? Go ahead.
Yeah, correct.
Okay, what are your thoughts about this?
I've been in the business for a long time. I can tell you that the reason for high drug prices in the United States of America is the fact that there are too many hands in the pot. We really don't need any more insurance companies or plan benefit managers setting drug prices or negotiating drug prices. If we had a single payer for prescription drug coverage alone in the United States, we would have the government entities negotiating with drug companies for the prices, and there would be no necessity for these huge markups and clawbacks and all the other shenanigans that go on behind the scenes that cause drug prices to be high. And so a lot of the stories I've been listening to are exactly what's happening. The drug goes out for a certain price, and the PBM negotiates another price, and the PBM keeps a portion of that price. They rebate a portion of the price to the drug company. I mean, it's split up so many ways, it has to be high just to exist in that environment. Mm. But if you remove those two from that environment and allow our government to negotiate directly with drug prices, which I'm sure a lot of our politicians don't want, because everybody and his brother has drug stock and PBM stock. You know, it's going to hurt everybody in the pocket a little bit, but that's where the costs are. There's no other way to say it except that there's too many hands in the pot. Got to get rid of PBMs and insurance companies.
Santo, that's Santo in Melbourne. He's a pharmacist. Julio Ochoa with Health News Florida, getting similar feedback from so many folks over this hour, seeing too many hands in the pot. Now, we started this show talking about this notion of importing prescription meds from Canada. That would increase the number of players here in Florida's medical market, although the intent, of course, is to make it less painful for the consumer. But that would introduce another element, too.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, one thing, I'm really impressed with how many people know what a PBM
is. They really do. Yes,
manager.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's really
They've been
surprising.
Educating us. I mean, yes.
Yeah, right. And another problem is the drug rebate programs. The drug makers make their prices so high, and then they give out these rebates and say, okay, we're going to give these to consumers so they can afford our drugs that are so high. And there's pushback by the insurance companies that say, you know, you should lower the price and get rid of these rebates and actually have people know what the price is and pay for the actual price of the drug. So it's just all wrapped up in a convoluted system that there's fingers pointing. Each one is pointing fingers at each other, and it makes it really difficult to solve.
Let me ask you then to close this out. Can, if the state were to get federal approval for cheaper prescription drugs from Canada, that's several years away. It would be a long, convoluted road to that, correct?
Well, right. They would have to get approval from the HHS, the Health and Human Services. And that has not happened. I mean, states have tried, and they have not been able to get the federal approval. So, yeah, it would probably be a couple of years at least.
But, Allison, there's 12 states that are talking about this now. Vermont did it a year ago. Colorado is in this debate. Florida, the third most populous state. I mean, you know, pretty soon we're talking about a bit of a pharmaceutical rebellion, a prescription drug rebellion, so to speak, in the union.
In the end, I mean, There are the issues of, you know, we're worried about safety, but there's also politics involved. And the more states that get, you know, start asking for this, that's votes. And so eventually, if enough people say this is what they want, then the HHS will at least feel pressure to consider it. And they have said they're open to the idea in the sense that they would look at it in terms of safety and determine whether or not it's a possibility. I do think that it's one of the more convoluted solutions to the system to have, you know, you know U.S. citizens or governments or insurance companies buy products that are made here, or some of which are made here, from another country. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's another way of putting pressure on politicians and drug companies and insurance companies to figure out a solution to this problem that's been, you know, getting worse over the years.
Well, thank you both so much for a great discussion. Allison Kojak with NPR, Julio Ochoa of Health News Florida. Thank you both. And certainly our callers and tweeters added an enormous amount, too, to a very hot topic on the show. It is the Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Alex Gonzalez and Heather Schatz are producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, and our Technical Director, WLRN's Director of Radio Operations, is Peter Meritz. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great weekend. We'll be back next Friday at noon.